Blog Talk Radio.
When I was walking, patting my feet on the pavement, really, truly trying to find me a gig, well, did you stand up and speak out in my favor? Cold desperation, she's a devil in bed, scratching till my bones are back. Pills and needles are all I've left to save her. No, you don't. When I was walking, patting my feet on the pavement, really, truly trying to find me a gig, well, did you stand up and speak out in my favor? She's a devil in bed, scratching till my bones are back. Pills and needles are all I've left to save her. No, you don't see.
Trying to keep
careful at love. You don't see me. You don't see me. I'm tired of trying to attract your attention. You're gonna see me now. Don't see me when I be trying to do right, baby. You're gonna see me now.
You're listening to The Conversations with Greg Lasser and Nat Wood here at G Radio in New York City. We can find your classic soul and R&B music, the music for your soul. That was You Don't See Me Live with Al Jarreau. Nat, welcome.
Hey, brother, how you doing?
Brother, you know me. I'm always sexy, good-looking, dark.
Fortunately, I don't know all of that, but I'm sure you're right.
You know what? I get that. I got it. Hey, listen, this week has been a challenging week. Well, not only challenging, I think with Trump and Cohen and everything, it's been crazy. So tonight, everybody, as you know, the genius, the man, the myth, the legend, Nat, as always, will lead in his soliloquy of his opinion.
Oh, I appreciate everything you say, brother, but I can't do this alone, and I'm talking to the man, the myth, the legend, Greg Lasseter, on the telephone.
Thank you.
On the radio.
Nat, you have taught me so much, Nat. Thank you. And I need to say this, and I will say this every time I do media, TV, or radio. Nat Wood, you guys can Google him. He has more than I have, won so many awards for excellence. And the reason I say this on every show is because he is the type of guy, not like me. Nat. He doesn't care. He cares about his beliefs and helping our community and solving the issues. And Nat, with that said, Nat, I follow your lead. People know this. I follow your lead. I follow your lead. One, you're older. I'm just saying.
You better be careful where you follow me to. You keep dropping that older stuff.
But I follow you. I follow you almost anywhere.
I know. Respect your elders. I appreciate what you said, and I appreciate the way you lead in. And it's true. The song that you led in with, Al Jarreau, You Don't See Me, is consequential to the show we're going to do. And it's consequential to what you said. We are going through not just a tremendous week, but we've been going through some tremendous times. The last couple of decades have been very, very stressful. The last 4 or 5 years since the Trump presidency has, increase that stress exponentially. But we just came off of Black History Month. We haven't international audience, so they may not know this. Many of them do, but not all of them.
Right.
In the United States, in February, we celebrate Black History Month. And when you celebrate Black History Month, there are certain people you tend to take a look at. You certainly look at Rosa Parks, and you look at Ralph Bunche, we looked at, who is overlooked many of the times. But we took a good look at Ralph Bunche. As a matter of fact, I think the UN just did a thing about Ralph Bunche, commemorating Ralph Bunche.
Right.
We look at Marcus Mosiah Garvey, not only his Back to Africa issue, but his black his Back to Africa position, but his Black is Beautiful position, and his international shipping vision. But one of the most observed people, aside from Malcolm, is Dr. Martin Luther King.
Right.
And Dr. King really, when Dr. King lived, you're like a whippersnapper, so you were just a kid. But when
Dr.
King lived,
all right.
You're just a little baby.
No. I'm not even. But go ahead. I'm not even saying you're a little bit older. You look older than
you. You was a gleam in your daddy's eye. when Dr. King was doing his thing, it was a very stressful time. You had people like James Baldwin, like Malcolm, certainly, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and the not just the African American community in the United States, but the entire global community was going through a transitional phase.
Right.
And there was a lot of stress. Just like today, there was a drug crisis and wars we were coming off of. We were coming off of the Vietnam War.
Right.
There were wars and rumors of wars. There was an opioid crisis all over the place. But because of Dr. King, there was also tremendous hope for the future. Fast forward to today, we have all of the stresses that we had when Dr. King and Rosa Parks were at their apex in the early 60s to late 60s into the 70s. But we, because of who we have as our leaders, we are not as hopeful for the world as we were. Now,
Okay, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go on, I'm listening.
No.
I want you to interject.
No. I hear what you say, because back then we looked, even in the opioid crisis, which the government infused our community with, without a doubt, and left the black man with no job, whatever. My thing is we still had more hope then than we do now, I think.
Right. Right.
Now, my question to you is not, I mean, do we really need, again, fast forward 50, whatever years, all our leaders are gone, or not a Martin, Malcolm, Rosa, Ralph, whomever. Why do you think we need leaders to lead us?
I don't think a leader can lead us. Because I think the people have been so jaded and corrupted by the modern world that I just don't think I don't think that the leaders led the people as much as they were front men for the will of the people.
Oh,
and
excellent. Excellent.
The people were headed in a direction that gave us hope for the world. Not that the leaders were going to be extraordinary, but that we were getting better as a species, that we were growing as a species, that we were becoming less hateful, less racist, less... Excuse me. Wow. As you see, I got the bubonic plague over here.
and that's my whole point. Even with the bubonic plague, he's still
man for the people.
We don't have. It doesn't seem like the people are getting better anymore. It seems like they're reverting to a more atavistic time, a more hateful time, a more and it's not even powers and principalities that I'm most disappointed in. It's the way the people are moving themselves. I'm just not sure how this is going. If it was a question of a leader, we could just get rid of a couple of people and get back on track. But I'm just not sure if we are moving in that same direction that we were.
No. My question to you is you know what? Donald Trump is Donald Trump. And as a group of people, black and brown. We didn't matter who was the president, because even
right.
with Obama,
right.
it didn't matter who was the president, that we would thrive in our community. Now,
right.
I think that since the Trump regime that he, again, co-signed, racism. Do you
right.
think as we as black people have actually bought into it? When I say bought into it, meaning that have we bought into it to the point where that we always knew it was there. That we always did. And we always, you know, did what we had to do. But I see black and brown people like being different.
You always corner me into saying stuff.
Actually, I don't. Because you know what, Nat? You say what it is.
I don't think black people have bought into it. I think black people have gotten to a place where they talk a whole lot of tough talk in their music, and they do a whole lot of things to each other. But in terms of combating that thing we know as white supremacy, we become chicken shit.
But Nat, let me interject. You have always, and I have always co-signed on, there's a difference in white supremacy and racism.
Oh, hell yeah.
And
oh, hell yeah.
It is that we as black and brown people, I personally believe we bought into racism and not understanding white supremacy.
That is correct.
And
that is correct.
With that, and I think we've become complacent.
But we don't understand white supremacy. And if
that,
you don't understand...
I know, brother. You're a genius. Can you, again... This is why, guys, you can watch us on TV, hear us on podcast every week. Nat and I want to, we already know the issues. We want for you guys to understand and what it is, and then talk about solutions. Nat, can you do us the honor again to explain white supremacy versus racism?
A black historian, Professor Mackey, said, if you don't understand white supremacy, everything else will confuse you. And we are very, very confused. White supremacy is different from racism. Donald Trump uses racism in order to bolster white supremacy. But racism doesn't always bolster white supremacy. Sometimes it hinders white supremacy. It has for years hindered white supremacy. It was better to pretend to be not racist or not be racist in order to advance the cause of white supremacy. There's a lot of people who don't aspire to racism. They're polite. They say good morning. They say hello. And I'm talking about white people.
Right.
Excuse me. The listeners have to excuse me. I was out in the cold like a fool, and I caught a cold.
With no sweater.
The people who benefit most from white supremacy are the people who are most polite. The people who benefit most from white supremacy are the people who buys outward racism. Because with white supremacy also comes white privilege. There's a certain privilege to being the masters of the universe. Make no mistake about it. European culture, European imperialist culture, if that's the right way to put it, is the dominant culture of the world. There ain't
because
no place on the well.
In your opinion, do you think we allow it?
Like I said, I think a lot of things happen to create this thing, and I think now we've gotten so used to it that we don't even recognize it. A lot of us have benefited from it. Financially, educationally, but mm-hmm. far more for the millions that have benefited. Billions and billions have been crushed to sustain it. And even more have no belief in themselves as a result of it. So there
is it because
is a
of
white
assimilation?
Assimilation into a dominant culture that is not your culture and deems all other cultures inferior. If it wasn't for the inferior part, if it wasn't for the fact that it deems all other cultures inferior, there might not be as much of a problem. But the fact that it is the dominant culture and it views all other cultures inferior both intellectually and aesthetically. You have a lot of cultures that are self-hating. You have a lot of cultures that I think African Americans are especially in 29. It's funny that in the 21st century, I think African Americans are less proud of themselves than they were 100 years ago, possibly even 200 years ago.
What about 20 years ago? In the 70s?
Even 20 years ago.
With that said, the African Americans, look at what's happening in Africa. These people are trying to lighten themselves.
Right. In Africa, in India, in Asia, most of the African American, especially the women, but even the men, Dominicans, a lot of Americans are bleaching their skin. You look at Nicki Minaj, bleach skin. You look at Lil Kim, bleach skin. They are all, and they all believe that Michael Jackson bleached skin, and there are a lot of people, especially in the entertainment field, who bleach their skin because they believe this enhances their career, especially as they get older and less secure about their looks.
There's a breakdown. There's a breakdown in why that happened.
Wow.
I think.
I mean, there's a lot of things that they're insecure about.
Black people, we came through the struggle. We came through the struggle when, I think, 20s. The 70s, that we knew what the struggle was, but we endured. Even when they infused drugs into our community.
Right.
We endured. Why is that different? I think back then was worse than now. I think.
I don't, because we had something that we, by and large, don't have anymore. We have the family structure of the total village. Tomorrow,
perfect.
I'm going to a funeral of a friend of my mother's. She was like 90.
I'm sorry.
She just passed away recently. She is in her 90s. I forget whether it's 92, 96, but she was in her 90s. But all of those people who were friends of my mother, my grandmother, they were surrogate parents. I mean, they were, it was a legitimate community, even when the community endured hard times. We don't have those structures anymore. People are on their own. People we don't have those structures anymore.
We talk about this on TV as well. Now, is it because this is what fails me. This is what I don't understand. And you and I, Matt, you became who you are, and I became who we are, who I am, not because of, in spite of. That's why you are who you are and who I. But we had the foundation of you more so than me, because you're the uncle you carried on that legacy and trying to say to family, look, this is what Uncle Charlie, I think that was his name. Uncle Charlie.
Uncle Red.
Right.
Yeah, his name was Clarence.
This is what
we called him Uncle Red.
Clarence. This is what he was trying to parlay. And the family, you are Uncle Red now, I think. You try and still. And my thing is that, okay, we don't have that foundation anymore. What will it take? We can't use the excuse one parent household. We can't use the excuse of drugs. We can't use any excuses anymore, given now we have more access to information. You see what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Yeah, but we don't have access to living examples of the fact that there is something to aspire to greater than personal wealth. We had Martin, and Martin's vision was for the world. But we also had Malcolm, and Malcolm was very, very important. Malcolm, my Uncle Red was like Malcolm, because Malcolm comes from a place that was all fucked up. And a lot of us come from a place that's all fucked up. Malcolm's father was a Garveyite. Malcolm's father was a self-sufficient Garveyite who was murdered by the Klan. His mother ended up in a mental institution. Malcolm, I think, was one of nine. Malcolm had been Malcolm actually found his redemption in prison. Malcolm used drugs. Malcolm hustled. Malcolm went to jail. Malcolm was uneducated largely. Most of his education came in prison. He would study a different word in the dictionary every single day.
Absolutely. Yep.
In the dictionary every single day. And the biggest lesson that Malcolm offered by living example, because he came through all of this bullshit, was that never give up on yourself. That if you want to be better than you are, it is attainable no matter how fucked up things are.
Right.
We have 2 million black people in jail in the United States. The United States throws black men in jail, and now black women like it's Skittles. A lot of my brothers and sisters in lockdown, on lockdown, come from really bad circumstances. But we have no living examples that you can not just achieve financial success, but you can be actually better than this shit. You can be a person that you can look in the mirror and be proud of. A lot of the people who make a lot of money, especially in media, because media is a shit.
Right. Right.
The entertainment industry is a shithole. But you As a matter of fact, who's the bald-headed guy who does the game shows and stuff on TV?
Black guy?
Steve Martin? No, not Steve Martin.
No, Steve Harvey.
But it's something Martin. Black guy. He said some stuff. Integrity was
Montel
before
Jordan.
People. No, not Montel. The guy on Family Feud. Black guy, Family
Steve
Feud.
Steve Harvey. Right.
Trump guy.
Totally guy.
Yeah. Monique was mad at Monique was angry with Lee Daniels,
Oprah Winfrey,
and Netflix over money, especially Lee Daniels.
Right.
And she was mad that Oprah and some other people didn't stand
Oprah
up
Winfrey,
for her. Because, right.
Let me ask you, Oprah Winfrey, Lee Daniels. And Tyler Perry.
Right. She was angry with them. Then you had the Jussie Smollett thing, who was the Lee Daniels person also.
With Empire.
And he was reported to have been angered, for lack of a better term, at the fact that he was only getting, what was it?
$65,000
an episode for a network television hit.
Right.
Also a Lee Daniels production.
Right.
Monique said she got $50,000 for her Academy Award winning performance in Precious.
My question to you is, we had that conversation. She has been in the game long enough to know how the game is played.
Yeah.
But she accepted that.
Yeah.
The $50,000. Now, my question is, okay, you accepted. She was a comedian. She accepted that. Now, you've got an Academy Award. Every time people talk about Monique, Oscar winning Monique. Now, she complained and bitched that she didn't do any of that before she got the Academy Award. She accepted all those conditions that they put before her. Now, the game changes. It changes after she wins and want to go back and bitch and complain.
Right.
And talk shit. And that right there, Matt, you know how I feel about that, but I'll let you appreciate and continue because.
You kind of made the point, but you made the point that I have been stumbling over since the show first started, that there's two factors in play. One, that we can be better than we are. Steve Harvey makes the point that integrity is for poor people. I say that's bullshit. I say he's a clown.
I agree with you.
But this is the point he makes. You also make the point about Monique accepting this situation until it seemed like financially it was not tenable for her to do it anymore, by which time it was too late, and then having an explosion and saying, why won't everybody boycott with me?
Right.
Okay, so you got two things in play. You have no real examples of people succeeding, black people succeeding, and showing some integrity. Right. When I was
that's
coming
the
up,
key word.
You had living
that's
examples of people
no,
who overcame
integrity.
All
integrity.
Sorts of shit.
Integrity.
Right. And you have black people, especially in Hollywood, who have become accepting of the white supremacist world that they live in, accepting it. When I came up, that did not exist. So
not
you
at
had
all.
People who risked their careers. You have Muhammad Ali, who risked his career, his freedom, everything for the sake of maintaining his integrity and his pride. You had people like Ossie Davis. You had people like
Ruby
D. And I'm not talking about You had artists who like Curtis Mayfield. You had artists like Marvin Gaye. You play Marvin Gaye all the time. A lot of people don't realize when Marvin Gaye made that Mercy Mercy Me thing.
Right.
Barry Gordy was dead set against it. He said, "Marvin, you're going to destroy your career with this political bullshit."
That brother, and what's going on?
Right. That is correct. You don't have those examples anymore. Now you have examples of people like Steve Harvey, who leads, who to me is the living, breathing example or definition of Langston Hughes's "Just Be Simple" poem.
AKA,
well, that's what it is. You know, you want to get yours, just be simple.
Right.
You know, that seems to be many of the people in the entertainment field. Just be simple. Just give white people what they want. Don't show any integrity. Don't have any balls, any guts.
It's all about yourself.
It's all about yourself. It's not just about yourself, but it's about not making any waves, being totally subservient to white supremacy, totally accepting of white supremacy. Forget about anything else, and that's how you make
it. And that people seemingly enough to forget about this one woman who was way before her time, who came to Nina Simone shot, threatened her manager or record label in Europe, and because he didn't pay her what she was owed, but she still remained steady. And I will, on my fucking media, show you guys the interview how Nina Simone said she's not having it. She did not sell out. And she came through the struggle. And didn't sell out. Like, it's so, people don't, Matt, you see it all too well. It's bigger than us. It's so much bigger.
I'll give you a better example. Even an example that young people can really appreciate. Muhammad Ali.
Right.
Now, Muhammad Ali is the reason that people like Floyd Mayweather have become multimillionaires. That's right. Before Muhammad Ali, fighters, especially black fighters, wasn't worth a pot to piss in. That's right.
People
that's
like those
right.
guys. Yeah.
They opened up the money thing. And they opened up the money thing by risking everything and winning. Because Muhammad Ali risked not just the loss of career, he risked prison.
Right.
He was ostracized, all for taking a position about him being a minister of his religion, like any other religion.
Let me interject. It wasn't about the money.
No, he was willing to give up millions of dollars to take this position. I mean, he didn't just say he would. He put it all on the line, and they took it from him. And he did not buckle. And because of that,
not only
like
he took it from them, he came back.
And he won, but he was willing to lose. He rolled the dice and was willing to lose it all as a matter of principle. And
but he did.
When you talk about, and this was all about the Nation of Islam, and it wasn't, and it wasn't simply the Nation of Islam. It was the fact that the Nation of Islam represented a black religion during the 60s, during the 50s and 60s, and J. Edgar Hoover refused to refer to it as a religion. He called it a cult. If you look at the Freedom of Information Act, place that J. Edgar Hoover, and a lot of it is redacted, and it's old school redacted with a black magic marker. But he never referred to the Nation of Islam as a religion. He referred to it as a cult. And that's what it was all about. It was about whether or not African-American people had the right to establish a religion and whether the United States courts would acknowledge that a religion that African-Americans started was valid.
Right.
And they listed almost anything. They listed the Church of Reefer Smokers as a religion. Anything was a religion if it was started by white folks. So this was about pride in who you were, pride in what you established, and whether or not we were legally allowed to establish a religion separate and apart from those religions established by white people.
Not only that, today, the people don't understand, even black people. The FBI list of terrorist organizations, they list the Black Panther, they list the Nation of Islam.
Right.
And if you did your homework, those two, see, I don't subscribe to the Nation of Islam, but I do understand what they mean. I get that. Black Panther helped our community more so than anybody. That's a fact. They provided
I agree with you, and I don't understand why the Nation of Islam would be classified as a terrorist organization, since to the best of my knowledge, the only person who has died who is even alleged to have died from an incident related to the Nation of Islam is Malcolm X himself. But getting back to Floyd Mayweather and getting back to the points that we were trying to establish when we first started talking. Floyd Mayweather, now Gucci makes these blackface things. And some, not enough, but some folks in the black community were rightfully up in arms about this thing. As a matter of fact, the blackface thing has become an epidemic. You know, white folks are just going crazy with this shit.
You know what? H&M, Prada, Burberry, all did it.
Yeah. They're going crazy with that stuff. And they're making all sorts of blackface stuff and pretending like they didn't know it was blackface stuff. You know?
Right.
Did I do that? I'm sorry. I didn't know. Okay. So now Floyd Mayweather comes with his ignorant ass. And for some spiteful reason, decides to buy up all the damn Gucci he could find. He goes in there with his little entourage of illiterate thug life hanger-oners, and they make derogatory statements about the wishes of black people. Right. And the only black people who are against this are knowledgeable black people who actually care about other, not just other black people, but people. We'd like to see the world get better, not worse.
The cause.
And
the cause.
In defiance of that, he just goes nut, cracker sweet. and this is what I mean. We do not have the examples of integrity that we had. Rosa Parks risked her life. Risked her life in racist ass hang you from a tree, Mississippi. And this is not long after what they did to Emmett Till. So you know they're serious. Goodman, Schwerner, and Cheney, two Jewish guys and a black guy, were disappeared in the Deep South for supporting the civil rights movement. So we're talking about a volatile time where people were risking everything so that black people could advance. And now we're in the 21st century. And we have a woman, Octavia Spencer. I think it was Octavia, the heavy set woman who was in who won the Academy Award.
It was Octavia. With the pot.
Right. She takes the title of the Green Book, which is a book about the African American migration from the Deep South. It's a story of blacks leaving the oppression of the Deep South to come to places like Chicago and the North, and the hardships that they endured. And a black post office worker in Harlem writes a book to make their journey not just more comfortable, but safer for them. This is a story of black heroism. She takes that title and attributes it to a story that she has where the black person, they take a real black person, Dr. Shirley, and fictionalizes his life to make a story about a white person,
the protagonist,
and give it the chauffeur, who was a real person. He was a star in what was it, The Sopranos or something. He played in The Sopranos. He was a bouncer or some stuff. But they take a story of African-American heroism, take that title away from black people. A black woman does this, a black female, black female who has become successful in Hollywood. You know, not somebody who's like living hand to mouth, but someone who is successful in Hollywood. She takes African-American, a story of African-American heroism, and makes it a story about a white person to the degree that the black central character in the story wins an Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor.
Supporting actors. Right, actor, exactly.
So it's not a story about us in any way.
No. And that, with that said, we got a few minutes. I will give you the last word.
I mean, I took the story of Jesus and made it about Elijah Muhammad, white folks would have a shit fit.
Oh my God! Hell yeah.
We have to do better. You say this all the time. I say this.
But we have
to do better. And I'm not sure whether or not getting rid of Trump is going to solve our malaise. Because the problem
is
much bigger than that. It's much bigger than that.
Hey, Nat,
it's much bigger than
brother,
that.
I love you. Guys, you've been listening to Conversations with Greg Lasson and Nat Wood on G-Radio New York City, where you can find your classic soul and R&B music. The music for your soul. We'll be back next Friday, same time, same bat channel. And you can watch 30 frames a second. Hey, Nat, one love, baby. You are amazing. I'm going to go out with Change Is Gonna Come.
I love you, brother.
Peace out. One love. Peace.
I was born by the river in a little tent. Like the river I've been running, running ever since. It's been a long time coming, but I know change gonna come. It's been too hard living, but I'm afraid to die. I don't know what's up there, beyond the sky. It's been a long time. But I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it is. Then I go to my brother. Ooh. And I say, brother, wind up knocking.